look at the problem that he'll be removing. Let's read from our Bhaktivinoda Thakur handout. We'll be looking at demon 5, Vatsasura. Vatsasura, the demon who assumed the form of a calf, represents performing sinful activities out of an immature mind under the control of greed and the bad influence of evil company. By the mercy of Krishna, this fault is vanquished. Living entities are sober by nature, but when they are disturbed due to possessing a body made of blood and flesh, it is called baladosha, or juvenile offences. This is the fifth obstacle in the form of Vatsasura. And so, in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's Harmonist in February 1932, there was an article on Vatsasura, and as it's implied in what we just read, this anatta not only applies to the young, but also the neophyte, those that are new in devotional service. And he says some very interesting things there that I'd like to share with you about that. He says that juvenile innocence is not the monopoly of young persons any more than juvenile naughtiness is. The soul is neither young nor old. Until the service of Godhead is realized, it is impossible to be really moral. That's also an interesting point that I'd like to elaborate on. There's an article called Transcendental Morality, in which Bhaktivinoda Thakur says some very interesting things about this. He says, genuine devotees of Krishna are never inclined towards immorality. All desirable ethics are totally pledged to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the very form of Dharma. The highest ethical principle in science for the jiva is attachment to the Supreme Lord, the ultimate limit of which is found only in the devotees of Krishna. So he's implying that, or he's not implying, he's saying that it's attachment that is the real morality. It's all protective. And then he goes on to say something that is very, very Bhaktisiddhanta. He says, there is no dharma at all in subjects enjoyed by the masses. Whatever ethics or morality exists within the universe and whatever external dharma is present are not pure truth. All dharma, all truth, is situated at Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. On hearing this, people may say I'm crazy, but I don't mind. Let them say that I've given up the correct path and gone in the opposite direction. I will continue on that path. Very much in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mood. So this idea of actually morality without Krishna consciousness is not possible. It can be challenged, and we can fall from that position a lot more easily than we can if we're actually Krishna conscious. He goes on to say that Vatsasura cannot be killed by us. He's too strong for us. Juvenile innocence is a necessity both for the young and the old, but one cannot acquire it by any unofficial process, only by the mercy of Krishna, only by engaging in his service. And he also gives some insights specifically about the young, which I thought would be interesting for those who have children. One thing that is he talks about is boyish naughtiness. This is actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur from his Krishna Samhita. But it is an article by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's in the appendix. Boyish naughtiness is apt to be overlooked, nay, encouraged, under the impression that it is his nature to be naughty. This opinion overlooks the all-important factor that the training is intended for the welfare of the soul of the boy, and not for the juvenile body or mind. Amazing point. This opinion overlooks the all-important factor that the training is intended for the welfare of the soul of the boy, not for the juvenile body or mind. The soul does not require to be treated with indulgence. He is neither young nor old in the worldly sense. The body and mind of the boy have to be employed in the interest of the soul. Boyish naughtiness and boyish virtue are alike unnecessary for the soul. It is necessary for the soul to be freed from either form of worldliness. The soul is neither young nor old. So it's a really amazing statement, and you know, it's a fundamental importance for anybody who's involved in raising children or teaching children, this point. He goes on to say that the only way to ensure the immunity of boys and girls from precocious sensuality is to engage them in the service of Krishna in such a way that they become attracted to him. Scripture declares this to be the only effective and natural method, and only a Krishna conscious teacher can do it. Someone's not sold out to Krishna, how can they give others attachment for Krishna? It's not possible. He goes on to say that there will be black sheep. There will be bad elements, like you've got kids at school, there are kids that are not such a good influence on your kids. So he says there will be black sheep, and caretakers of the children should be very careful about this, very vigilant. A few other thoughts came to mind when I was thinking about this. One is a Vedic maxim, and that is that the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception will manifest at the time of puberty of their child. It's a very interesting thing. So you can't blame the child if he's giving you trouble at puberty. You have to blame yourself, because it's a reflection of your own consciousness at the time of conception.
Why doesn't it manifest earlier?
Because that's the way things work. Pretty much things are dormant until puberty. Oh. In terms of manifesting, you know, what life's all about for most people. Also, I remember something Prabhupada said, and that is that the mouth, belly, and genital are in a straight line. So if we honor only prasad, and we feel our children only prasad, then the other two are more easily controlled. So that was something I thought about. And another thing was that sex desire troubles not only the young. That's not the criteria. It troubles anybody who's locked in body consciousness. Anybody who's locked in body consciousness. And I wanted to read you a sweet story about this from Srila Prabhupada. I like his stories. So in this one, he makes it very clear that if we're in body consciousness, this problem is going to stay with us for a very long time. This is Srila Prabhupada. There is a very instructive story, and it is a historical fact. The Muslim emperor Akbar once inquired from his minister, "How long does one remain troubled by lusty desires?" The minister replied, "Up to the last point of death." Akbar did not believe it and said, "No, no, how can you say that?" "All right," said the minister, I shall reply in good time. So one day, all of a sudden, the minister approached the emperor and said, "You be immediately ready to come with me with your young daughter." Akbar knew that his minister was very intelligent and that there must be some purpose. He went with him, and the minister took him to a person who's going to die. The minister then asked Akbar, "Kindly study the face of the man who is about to die as you enter the room." So Akbar noticed that as he and his young daughter were entering, the dying man was looking at the face of the young girl. In this way, Akbar understood. Yes, what he said is true. Up to the last point of death, the desire is there to see the face of a young girl. This is called dusparena. It is never fulfilled. So the only real solution is Krishna consciousness. There's some very sweet things that Prabhupada gives us as inspiration in Bhagavatam about how we can deal with this. And also, we notice how acharyas, they give us insight into the markings of the lotus feet, Radhasham, Gunitai, etc. And we notice that on Radharani's right foot there's a club. So this club, by meditating on this club, we can conquer sex desire. It's very interesting that this marking is not on Krishna's foot.
Yeah,
it's on Radha's foot. So the import of that is that if we want to deal with these lower nature type things, we take shelter of the servants of Krishna. And of course, Radharani is the topmost. By their influence, All of our bad habits can be overcome by their association, influence, distraction. So it's interesting that it's actually on Radharani's foot, it's not on Krishna's foot. So another thing that Prabhupada says, I find this really sweet. It's actually Bhagavatam 3:28-32. I'll read a little bit of the purport also. The verse reads, a yogi should similarly meditate on the most benevolent smile of Sri Hari, a smile which, for all those who bow to him, drives away the ocean of tears caused by intense grief. The yogi should also meditate on the Lord's arched eyebrows, which are manifested by his internal potency in order to charm the sex god for the good of the sages. So by meditating on Krishna's eyebrows, you can conquer sex desire also. I read what Prabhupada says in the purport. Actually, this is interesting. It is stated in this verse that the charming eyebrows of the Lord are so fascinating that they cause one to forget the charms of sense attraction. The conditioned souls are shackled to material existence because they are captivated by the charms of sense gratification, especially sex life. The charming brows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead protect the sages and devotees by being charmed by material lust and sex attraction. Jamuna Acharya, great Acharya, said that ever since he had seen the charming pastimes of the Lord, the charms of sex life had been abominable for him, and the mere thought of the sex enjoyment would cause him to spit and turn his face. Thus, if anyone wants to be aloof from sex attraction, he must see the charming smile and fascinating eyebrows of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is sweet. Sweet.
Oh, which one is that one?
Okay, yeah. That's from the third canto, chapter 28:32. So these are things that we may be able to do, you know, from now and again. We may have a need for this kind of thing. But it's always remembered that there are long-term and short-term solutions to things. So the real solution is actually given in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:13:1. Sorry, I'm having a bad day with numbers today. I'll try again. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:13:2 plus purport. So I'll read that to you because we have to remember, we often forget, that lust doesn't have any independent existence. It's actually a perverted reflection of prem. It's a covering. It's not a separate thing. So we have to remember this. It's fundamental. So in this verse, very beautiful statement, Paramahansas, devotees who have accepted the essence of life are attached to Krishna in the core of their hearts, and he is the aim of their lives. It is their nature to talk only of Krishna at every moment, as if such topics were newer and newer. They are attached to such topics, just as materialists are attached to topics of women and sex. Get the point? And then in the pulpit, Prabhupada says some beautiful things. The word Sarabhritam means paramahansas. The hansa or swan accepts milk from a mixture of milk and water and ejects the water. Similarly, the nature of persons who have taken to spiritual life and Krishna consciousness, understanding Krishna to be the life and soul of everyone, is that they cannot give up Krishna Katha or topics about Krishna at any moment. What is very sweet for the materialist, namely women and money, is regarded as poison by the spiritualist. For the Paramahansa, Krishna is everything. But for the materialist, women and money are everything. I mean, Prabhupada knew what he was talking about. Yeah, so, you know, he's just making things very, very clear. Any questions or comments on this? What was discussed?
So that what... in that first one, it sounds like Vatsasura, he said, sinful activities out of greed.
Yeah. He's basically talking, from what we understand from the Acharyas, he's basically talking sowing of wild oats, they call it in English. You know, that young kids have a tendency to be a little immoral in their behaviour. He's concerned about that. There is that greed tendency also in children, but that's also there in everybody. It's not Krishna conscious.
I mean, small kids, they don't want to have anything, no?
Yeah, yeah.
They don't know more, they don't think who it belongs to, they just whatever they like, they want to take it.
Yeah, that's true. That's what you're thinking that's talking about?
I don't know.
I've just been following the train of thought of the charities that I've read from. Their preoccupation seems to be on the indulgence, sexual indulgence of neophytes and young people. That's how they tend to be reading. I haven't read anything about the green aspects, I didn't comment on it. But it's what you're saying is true, that the tendency is there in young kids. Anything else?
So this is from the Acharyas, that stress on the sex indulgence, because here is nothing said about that. So that's also one
It is said there, especially in the Krishna Samhita section, that they're disturbed by possessing a body made of blood and flesh. And it's called baladosha, or juvenile offenses. Mm-hmm. Like, it's subtly said, because we're talking with cultured people here.
What is a juvenile offense?
The way I understand it from what both Bhakti Sarasvati Thakur, what he is in particular is saying, is that we're talking about indulgence by young kids. And it's very interesting.
But both of them say this is not only for kids.
It's also for neophytes.
For any devotee who means...
He's talking neophytes. A neophyte, we're basically someone who's very locked in body consciousness, because it's a bodily function.
So it's about the gross sex desire.
More so.
Not subtly, because subtly is also addressed.
Yeah, that's a different thing. That comes up very interestingly. That'll come up in one of the announcements a bit later. Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
But that would be for Grihastha. Grihasthas also don't do Garbhodana Sanskar.
Yeah. It takes in quite a gamut. It takes in quite a range of limitations that we have. Because immaturity in spiritual terms means inability to understand and follow regulations that are given for our advancement. Basically what it means. We have agreed for something else, so we're not prepared to curb that. We want to actually do what we want to do, and then it will manifest in sinful ways, or ways that are derogatory for our spiritual advancement. Like that. Does that make sense? You okay with that? Yeah.
One concept which I never thought of, but while you were reading, I just caught it. Prabhupada says that materialist means that men who are interested in money and women. Uh-huh. So I just thought of it that it's materialist is only standing for men. Normally we would not have women in that category.
Well, we have to understand when the Acharyas and Prabhupada are talking men, they're talking generically.
Oh, okay.
They mean everybody.
Okay, the opposite as well.
They're everywhere, because there are other statements that women are 9 times more lusty than men.
Okay.
It works for both.
Okay.
But the main lesson for us is to not stay on the neophyte platform. And to realize that the way to factually get above this is to be absorbed in Krishna Katan. Because if there's attraction for Krishna, there won't be attraction for lesser things. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally.
Yeah? Any other thoughts, French?
They don't completely understand what
which plan?
I mean, why it is compared to a child?
Because children, they have that tendency at puberty, because the hormonal structure changes, everything changes. I had an experience myself once when I was teaching with a young girl, a very sweet young girl, very innocent, completely absorbed in her duties, you know, really sweet kid. And puberty came and she just turned. Her interests, her attractions, everything completely changed, like that. Like two sides of the coin, it just whacked. And it was a handful. It was difficult to deal with. So, you know, we're looking at, that's why, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he's saying it very gently, but he's talking about this, when we possess a body made of blood and flesh, that has implications. Has serious implications. In terms of how we behave.
That's why the child is used here, because that aspect at puberty, that's the most serious one. You know, the bodily concept there is the most. So that is why it's been compared to the...
Sit.
But then it is not really a calf. It's a calf is a small child, no?
Yeah. But we're talking here, he's saying it can be either young in terms of age, like physically young, or it can be spiritually young. It can be immature, neophyte. So this is also bothersome for the neophyte. They're still struggling. They haven't got the strength of strong sadhana behind them, strong association, the benefits that come from that. So they're still struggling. Is that okay? Yeah, this is very interesting. You know what? I'll tell you about that later. Okay.
Not me. Oh, dear, you said it nicely.
Well, you know, this surgery is going to be quite short for us. And Dr. Krishna Chandra, he conveyed through the superintendent of the hospital that there was a small problem for us. And it was easy to remove because of the health precautions given to us by our home doctor, Dr. Bhaktivedanta. He gave us the 4 weeks. He gave us prasadam. He gave us so much support. So, you know, like, it's difficult to discuss this because it really doesn't, you know, it's not something you really have to deal with a lot. So, you know, we maybe not be able to grasp it. But the point is that a lot of that credit goes to Prabhupada, not to us. That if he hadn't given us the 4 eggs when we were trying to chant Hare Krishna, if he hadn't given us prasad, would we be able to feel so confident? I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, just prasadam. If you look at the 314 purport to Bhagavad Gita, you realize how protective just that one thing, just, you know, only taking prasadam, how protective that is. So, you know, we look at it and say, huh, what's this about? But we can say like that because of Prabhupada's mercy, not because of our adhika.
But do I understand properly? Prasadam is protective
from gross sex, is that? You have a look at the purport sometime. It's protective from many things. Material affection, material attraction. You read it sometime. It's a very powerful purport. 314, by the way. Okay, so let's begin our discuss first Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. Vatsasura is the first demon killed in Vrindavan, and at this time Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells us Krishna is only 3-year-old baby. It's this little boy taking out the calves. From 3 years of age, he begins taking out the calves. The little boy takes care of the little calves. And very, very sweet. So let's begin by discussing Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. Anybody like to say anything about that?
I made an observation, but seems like it was different than what we are studying.
Okay.
When I was studying Vatsasura, there's not much that Prabhupada writes about Vatsasura. But I just felt that this one was a very deceptive and duplicitous character, because, you know, he's posing as a calf and he's actually a demon. So I was thinking that Vatsasura probably would be more related to the deceptive natures in us.
Okay. Well, all of the demons are like that.
Yeah, they're posing to be
something. They're posing to be something that they're not. That's how they get into our hearts.
Yeah.
Quite nasty characters.
Yeah,
interesting. Anybody else have anything?
This story about the fruit seller has always attracted me. That Krishna had very tiny grain at hands, and he carried very few grains. And when he gave the grains, the fruit seller was so attracted by Krishna that she was willing to give the fruits as much as Krishna could hold, just in exchange with a few grains. So, you know, that is the beauty and attraction in Krishna.
Right.
And that also proves that, you know, anybody who is attracted towards Krishna will not lose in the long run, because eventually she had her thing filled with gems. So in the short term, somebody might have some problems, you know, if they are following Krishna consciousness. But in the long run, there is no loss. There's always gain. So that's, for people who do not have full faith, that's a good thing to know that, okay, you know, I mean, Krishna consciousness is always gain. And also this point, I really like how Prabhupada, you know, in killing demons, he would also include Krishna consciousness. He says that this is the effect of Krishna consciousness. What was enjoyed 5,000 years ago by Nand Maharaj can still be enjoyed by Krishna conscious persons simply by talking about transcendental pastimes of Krishna and his associates.
Because that's what they do.
Yeah.
They're constantly absorbed. They're talking about Krishna. They even write songs so that they can sing and remember about Krishna.
But other books would not mention Krishna consciousness to the people, the devotees.
Yeah.
But Prabhupada, after explaining everything, would merge it with Krishna consciousness for the devotees.
That's
so
one of the beauties
beneficial.
Of Krishna. That's actually one of the beauties of Krishna book. Anybody else have anything to say?
For that fruit seller, I don't know where that is written. I heard in class that lady actually took the jewels and threw them in the Yamuna. She didn't want to keep the jewels. I have to find out where that is from.
One thing that interested me was that we're talking Nara Leela. We're talking very human-like Leela. And for some reason it really touched me that even the Brijabasis have an idea of the grass is greener on the other side. You know, because they're fed up with all these catastrophes, and then they decide they're going to move. And they're saying, "We have all been saved from different calamities by the grace of Lord Hari. Now we should be cautious and leave this place and reside somewhere where we can live peacefully. I think that we should all go to the forest known as Vrindavan, where just now there are newly grown plants and herbs. It is very suitable for pasturing ground of our cows, and we and our families, the gopis and their children, can very peacefully live there. Near Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, which is very beautiful, and there is newly grown grass and fodder for the animals. So there will be no difficulty in living there." You know, we all suffer this illusion. I mean, they're under a different illusionary force than us, but I just found it really sweet, because we're always thinking, oh, you know, it would be, you know, more peaceful there, and it would be more beautiful there, there'd be no difficulties there, I should go there, or I should do this because it would be better. So, you know, they're under yoga mind, they're not under the same covering as us, but I just found it sweet that they do that, and the first thing that happens is another demon comes. So the message is, you know, don't make external arrangements to deal with things. You know, better you make Krishna conscious, you know, make Krishna consciousness the answer to your problems. I found that really sweet.
But then I found also sweet that they have, like, their first consideration is where will the children and the cows be protected.
Yeah.
And then they move.
That's how everybody thinks. That's how all parents think.
On their own. But for them, this is so natural. Nowadays, that is not. Nowadays, nobody thinks where are the cows happy.
Well, some people do. There are still some wonderful devotees that think like that. But I agree, that's on the way out. Okay, let's move on. And we'll read from Bhagavad-samhita. It's always interesting to get his perspective on things. Aware that the demon Vatsasura had entered among the cars on Kamsa's order, Krishna stealthily approached him. Moving his tail as he wildly ran among the gopas, with his hind legs, the demon struck Krishna on the shoulder. As the boys fled, Krishna grasped the demon's two legs, rolled him about, and threw him to the ground. Picking him up again with both hands, Krishna threw the demon into a kapita tree. When the demon died, the great kapita tree fell and made the other kapita trees fall also. As the astonished boys called out, "Well done! Well done!" the demigods in heaven showered flowers, and amid shouts of "Jai! Jai!" Then from the demon came a great light that then entered Lord Krishna. Shivanaspara said, "O sage, what pious deeds did Vatsasura do in his previous life so that he was now able to enter Lord Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is a greater than the greatest?" Shinarad said, "He was a great demon named Pramila, who was the son of Muru. After conquering the demigods, he entered Vasishtha Muni's ashram and saw a cow named Nandini. Desiring that cow for himself, the demon transformed himself into a Brahmin and went to the ashram and begged for the beautiful cow. As for Sister, who had divine vision, stood silent, the cow herself spoke. Sri Nandini said, 'You are a demon, Muru's son, and you have assumed the form of a Brahmana to steal the sage's cow. Therefore, O wicked-hearted one, you now become a calf.' And the great demon, who was Muru's son, at once became a calf. He circumambulated Vasishtha and Nandini, bowed down, and said, 'Oh, please save me.' The cow Nandini then said, 'O great demon, at the end of Dvapara Yuga, when you go amongst Krishna's many calves, you will attain liberation.' Shinarad said, 'For this reason, the demon Vatsasura entered Lord Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead.'" That's interesting that he became a calf being cursed by a cow. Interesting point. Okay, so let's hear from Gopal Temple.
But it said in these Kamsa's friend. He must have forgotten.
Oh, for sure.
About that curse and blessing and all.
Yeah, the only one where I'm aware that the consciousness from before is kept is in the Jamala Jintris. Because Narada specifically blessed them that they would remember. And it's interesting because though they were so horrendous in their behavior and so self-centered, Arjun trees have beneficial effect. Arjun, you know, the bark of the Arjun tree is very good for heart. So they did some service, even by being trees like that. But they're the only ones I can think of where they actually remembered who they were and what was going on. The rest were understanding just by the mercy of these great sages that are aware of past, present, future.
And they also didn't die. They became pure devotees. And
yeah.
And they were blessed. It's their last life.
Yeah. But the fact that they were sent back to the demigod realm seems to indicate that they had some things to work through.
Maharaj said they went to preach.
Aha! That's a nice insight. That's a very nice insight. Thank you for that.
Because they saw so many leelas.
Oh yes, they really did. And they're also the ones who didn't harm anybody, like the rest of the demons were trying to harm people.
Actually, that was Vaidyanara's mercy. That's one of the reasons he put them. That's one of the reasons he put them in tree bodies, so that they couldn't do harm. They were stationary.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Thank you for that. Especially like the part about them going to preach. I always wondered how come they went back there. Why they didn't just go straight into Krishna's pastime?
And they actually saw a lot of pastimes. So, okay. But the boys departed for herding the calves at the auspicious moment. Servants who defeated devatas and caused all auspiciousness, carrying ingredients like splendid betel nut, colorful umbrellas, charmers, and silk cloth, followed after the boys and experienced indescribable inner happiness. Starting with their mother and father, at every door, the excellent women offered great wealth and performed aratika with jewels shining like lamps. They sprinkled the boys with fragrant flowers and glorified them with auspicious songs. They satisfied the boys with a profusion of befitting sweet words. With wide eyes, they saw the boys in front of them. The two boys then departed after offering respects to the elders, while experiencing the skills of faultless sounds of musical instruments. The devatas performed the same activities. Dressed in blue and yellow cloth, Krishna and Balaram appeared glorious among the children and calves as they played using flutes, canes, leaves, horns, ropes, balls, and wooden puppets. Looking at the boys in the distance with tenderness, the pious elders then returned home. After going some distance, Krishna and Balaram and the boys first let the calves wander freely and then put them in a group and brought them to a place filled with fresh grass. The boys played there until lunchtime. The two boys played their flutes, scattered fruits about, and went here and there making sounds with their ankle bells. Imitating bulls, they fought with each other with great affection and noise. Having the calves eat the grass and drink water, Krishna and Balaram then inspected all of them. Among the calves, he hugged one with his arms to relieve its itching, and touching its forehead with his own, he said, "If you want to go to your mother, I will arrange that." With such sweet words, he satisfied the calves. After the two splashed water on their friends, they put on special forest clothing and, wandering about, became astonished to see the wonderful animals and birds. When the two boys imitated the sounds of an animal, that animal would approach them. When they imitated the roaring of lions and tigers, seeing the animals become frightened, they stopped making those sounds. Happy because women sent by their mothers arrived with lunches at noon, Krishna quickly called his friends by playing his flute, whose notes sounded like human words, in order to give them bliss. When they all gathered, the women honored them, put them in lines, and had them sit down, placing Krishna and Balaram in the center. Since the boys desired to eat, the women then served them food in the proper order. For fun, some of the boys criticized the food. They argued with the women, and some of the women answered back. After the amusement of hearing the conversations, a qualified nurse spoke to Krishna when he seemed to refuse the food. "Carefully, I have brought drinks and delicious food. Rohini has carefully prepared it and sent me. Yashoda has repeatedly ordered me that you should taste the food. You should please us three by eating." After joyfully taking lunch with friends like Ram and Dham, Krishna performed Achman, and the nurse gave him a golden box filled with camphor-flavored betel. She said, Oh child, please follow your mother's orders, and giving up your childish behavior, quickly return home. Going some distance, considering the boys engaged in playing, she turned her head and with flashing eyes said to the boys skillful at herding the calves, "Cowherd boys, you are the life of Yashoda. Please bring Krishna back quickly." When the women had gone, the boys fed the calves the tenderest grass mixed with flowers and headed slowly towards Raja while dancing, laughing and playing. The sons of Brahma praised him from the sky and the devata showered flowers. Krishna took the path leading home. Along with Balaram and his friends, Krishna began walking back in order to bring the calves to their pens. Gathering the calves in a group, he became joyful at this success, and seeing the beauties of the calves, experienced contentment. The inhabitants of Raj saw in front of them that Krishna was approaching. As in the morning, he was decorated auspiciously. He offered respects to his mother and father, and joyful in their presence, went to his house. After bathing, he put on fresh clothing. Quickly eating, he then became happy by milking the cows. Calling the calves by saying the mother's name, he laughed as calves curry to their mothers. Servants brought the abundant milk to the house. Coming to the house, he pleased his mother and then offered her respects. Going to the rooftop to rest, he gave bliss to all. Putting their sons to sleep, the mother, surrounded by servant boys, went to the main building to do the chores. After the boys had spent some time living blissfully in Vrindavan, cruel Kansa, hearing the news of Krishna in Vrindavan from spies, began to think, this child of Nanda seems to be the child hidden by Vasudev deceptively, according to Durga's prediction. The child has killed Putana, whose powers were uncontestable. My heart fears even his name. He must be killed by some trick. He has thwarted greater and greater devices. It has become useless to attack him. Calling a servant, he said, what does he have most attraction for? Mm-hmm. The servant said, he has great affection for the calves. Kansa said, you should go to your room. Then he spoke to another person, bring Vatsasur to me. He has caused disturbance to Indra. That person, showing courage with respect, brought Vatsasur. Vatsasur stood there in a humble state, like a drop of water. As dirt dissolves in the presence of water, Kansa's heart melted in the presence of Vatsasur. He whispered to Vatsasur, my friend Vatsasur, please go to Nanda's Raj, and then approach the boy who herds the calves and plays. Disguising yourself as a calf, attack him. Thinking, one should follow the king's orders, Vatsasur went to the place as ordered. At a clean place on the bank of the Yamuna called Vatsakridan, Krishna, who kills such demons while caring for the calf, saw the demon who was poisoned to the eyes. Vatsasur began proudly wandering about at a place with abundant grass. The calf sensed his presence by his smell and became agitated at his sight. Seeing their condition, Krishna said to Balaram in a solitary place, elder brother, have you seen that calf near the water which did not come with the others in the morning? Balaram said, no, brother. Krishna said, so now please examine it carefully. Balaram said, it seems to have a ferocious nature. Krishna said, O elder brother, it's a demon. Balaram said, that is true. He's suddenly looking at both the calves and us with a cruel glance. Krishna said, if you give permission, I will kill him. Balaram said, he looks like a calf. Once killed, I fear gossip from the common people. Krishna said, once killed, it will be clear that he is a demon. No one will criticize us. Balaram then said with a smile, killer of the enemy, this demon is very devious. Slowly approach him by some trick. Krishna then called the calves close and relieved the itching on their throats and bellies by scratching them. Playing and singing everywhere, he spread joy. Thinking he had obtained a golden opportunity, the demon disguised as a calf approached Krishna to be scratched. Showing an affectionate nature, Krishna took the calf by its feet and tail and began twirling it around. By twirling the demon around many times, the demon lost his powers and reverted to his original form. In order to make fruits fall from a tree, he hurled the demon into a bale tree. The cowherd boys praised his grace, which was like that of a dancer, and his power of knowledge. The devata showered laughter and smiles. One could not distinguish the shower of flowers from showers of smiles. Krishna and Balaram then returned to their houses as on previous days. They told their friends to keep the killing of the demon secret since it would disturb the elders.
That's another thing with kids, I can't keep secrets.